Hi guys, welcome back to another episode of the podcast. It's me, Tobias, as always. So this episode is going to be my wrap-up reads. I am technically super late with this, but it's fine. The party don't start till I walk in. Boom, I'm in. Wow, I am so giddy. I am high off coffee on an empty stomach, which wasn't probably one of my most brightest of ideas, but hey. So this is essentially where I discuss books that I've read in the previous month, and then you guys can listen to it, see if you want to read it yourselves, and recommend me books and geek out together, and I can live my best and most authentic booktuber life, truly. If you know what booktube is, you should. It's essentially part of YouTube where people discuss books. It's a bunch of like nerdy white kids. It's pretty sad to me because I don't think I've ever seen a black YouTuber discuss books. Yeah, so if you actually know any black YouTubers who discuss books and part of like the book sphere on YouTube, let me know. Yes, so reading. I've really got back into reading this year. It was like a conscious effort because I've been slacking. I feel like once you get into sort of academic studies, you lose the kind of like the joy of reading. I feel like I went through a phase of, if I'm not reading something beneficial, as in like, you know, I was learning something, then it was useless. And it was like a really bad habit to get into, because a lot of like language and just storytelling, I'm a huge fan of people who can tell stories and people who are good with their words. I think because I suck at like the emotional scope of like social interactions, that I try to make up for it with words. Like I try to kind of understand the world through the medium of words and storytelling and stuff like that. So yeah, people like that interest me. So I think reading is obviously a fundamental thing. Everyone should do it. Pick a book. You will find a genre that works for you. You will find a book that kind of ignites your reading, and you should do it. And I'm a huge advocate of reading for pleasure. I do have a Goodreads, by the way, so you can, and I will do kind of like a summation of my thoughts in like the reviews. It is, the name is like H_thoughtcrimes, kind of like the name of the podcast. Yeah, so catch me there as well. So general overview of the content that I read, kind of, I think breaks up to maybe three, maybe four kind of genres or groups. The first one is like brain candy, right? These are books that I read for nothing more than just the pleasure of reading. Like, these are books that I don't expect to particularly learn anything. I don't expect to be like wowed by like new great concept and novel ideas. It's just for fun, really. That for me falls into like thrillers, psychological thrillers, crime thrillers, anything with people dying, anything with maybe dislikeful character. Is that even a word? Characters that you don't like. Like, I really like characters that sit in that sort of shade of grey, that kind of like amoral, generally weird kind of characters. I think I find them far more interesting than the, you know, the typical tropes of like the hero and, you know, the one who's always morally on the high ground. Like, I don't like that. I think that's why I just gravitate towards those kind of books. Yeah, so thrillers are my thing. The second one is probably literature. I don't know, I feel like I don't consume enough literature, or I didn't study enough literature at school. I don't know why. Anything that's considered, I guess, literature or modern literature particularly, that's the kind of stuff that I read. The third one would be anything sort of like politically engaging. So anything to do with geopolitics, general kind of like British politics, American, anything in that scope where I feel like just trying to gather like a better understanding of the world. I find that stuff really interesting. By the way, I find it really weird when people say that they're not interested in politics, or they don't get politics, or they don't think politics affects them. I think it's really strange, but for the most part, I think we should all be politically engaged. It doesn't matter what your political leanings are, you just should be engaged. I think it affects your every aspect of your life. So yes, anything to do with politics, that's the third one. The fourth one, I guess, would be like religious texts. Anything that I feel like will kind of help my spirituality and, you know, closeness to God. Like all of that kind of soul searching stuff. Although I've been really slacking. So if you do have anything that you recommend, by the way, if you're going to recommend me like religious books or like books pertaining to religion, please do not send me stuff about like how to be a good wife. No disrespect, but I am tired of reading that. Like, I'm so over the whole, you're a Muslim woman, so your entire life's work is to be someone's wife and mother. Like, can we not? Like, there are brilliant and utterly fascinating and incredible women throughout history who are Muslim, who did amazing work for the faith and the expansion and understanding of the faith. So don't just send me recommendations about books and how to like wear a hijab, that's it, and how to be a good wife. Like, I don't need that in my life. Yeah, that's it. That's kind of like how my book kind of reading scope looks at the moment. I'm not particularly interested in like fantasy or like sci-fi. The only sci-fi that I do is like Doctor Who, which I haven't done in ages, but like David Tennant will always be my favorite doctor. Like, you can fight me on that. But yeah, that's kind of what I read. How I got into reading, I read everything and anything, just as a kid, because I've said this again a million times, when you are an introvert and you spend most of your time inside of your head, books are really, really good ways to kind of engage and kind of like, it's kind of an escapism. And my father kind of fanned that flame for me as a kid. Like, the company he worked for worked with, like, I think, like, publishing, like, book people. So he would literally come home with like entire collections of books. So I think the first book collection that he bought me was like the Narnia collections. Like, I think there's 7 of them or something. And they were like encased in this like really beautiful sort of like cardboard. It was like this box thing, like all the books neatly put together, and it was just like beautiful. Yeah, so that's kind of how I got into reading, to the point like I would literally like inhale books. That was such a beautiful time. All I did was read and do nothing else in life. It was beautiful. But yeah, so my dad kind of like did that, and I would read anything and everything. So I kind of went from like the Narnia and Roald Dahl and to like Harry Potter. And then I think at some point we all went through the vampire phase. Like, don't judge me, okay? Like, it happened to the best of us, okay? Yeah, we went through like the vampire phase. And then I kind of got bored of like fantasy and like YA, sort of like young adult books. Like, they just kind of, they have the same repeating tropes, you know, the whole love triangle. And like, yeah, I don't read like romance books or like historical romance. Like, I don't read that stuff. I just can't get over like how and cringy the characters are. Like I said, I haven't read one in like years, so maybe like, you know, the writing has improved, but yeah, like, I don't read that stuff. That's when I kind of discovered thrillers. I think one of my still favorite all-time thrillers for me will have to be The Surgeon by Tess Gerritsen, I think her name is. Yes, I'm sure I've mentioned in the podcast in one of the episodes. But yeah, I really liked that. One of my favorite like all-time books is George Orwell's 1984. I love that book. It is beautiful. It is brilliant. I feel like it's a book that you have to read multiple times, like, to truly kind of grasp like the concepts and ideas. And I know it's like very wishy-washy, but especially when you kind of look at the scope of the world that we live in at the moment, it's just like really fascinating. And you know, everyone kind of uses the term Orwellian at some point. So it's just really interesting. I love his writing. Please don't ruin it for me. Like, I feel like the internet has a way of ruining my non-problematic faves. So I don't need you guys to be like, oh, well, technically he was problematic because he did this and this. Like, let me have this one thing, okay? Like, let me be willfully, lovingly ignorant. I'm sure there's a poem there somewhere. Yeah, so that's kind of my reading history and scope and things that I read. And the books that I will be reviewing actually are a couple of books for the month of February. I was going to kind of join them and do like March and February, but I think it's going to be way too long and I want to keep this exceptionally short. Okay, so the first kind of thriller that I read in February was Good Me, Bad Me by Aileen Lang. Bro, I gave that 2 stars. I was so over it. Like, and the thing that annoyed me about the book was like the reason I picked up the book in the first place was because the author, Aileen Lang, I believe this is her first book, worked in like the mental health field area, sector, whatever you want to call it, for like over 10 years. So I was like, you know what? There's like some history. She knows what she's talking about. I need a good book to read anyway. And it's just, it was very underwhelming. It was extremely underwhelming. I felt like, first of all, the use of like short sentences aggravates my soul. As you can tell, I'm a perpetual waffler. Like, I have multiple thoughts to spread out over multiple things and they all make sense in my head. So short sentences I just find them exceptionally jarring, and there is a lot of like repetitiveness and short sentences, and that just like creates a schism in my reading and it irks my soul. The second thing that I didn't realize I didn't like was the fact that it's set from like just a single narrative. Like, it's just the girl. Oh, I forgot to give you like the main premise of the book. This girl who's like 16 goes into the police station one day and she tells the police that her mom is a serial killer. Turns out she is a serial killer. It's like, oh my god, wow. And then she goes into like foster care. I was so unimpressed by this book. So yeah, she goes into care and she's being cared for by her actual therapist. Her psychiatrist is the guy who's also fostering her, and it's basically the dynamic of like the family and how it changes because of her. So she's like the one with the issues, and then it's the psychiatrist who has like almost like a god complex. He's there, always wanted to save kids and with like deep-seated issues. And then you have like the mother who's just like vacuous, and we find out why at some point. But it's like, again, it's like a lot of wishy-washy kind of like meh. She kind of just is like a useless character. And then the other, I guess, plot device is a daughter of the psychiatrist. She kind of acts out. She's like a typical like white upper middle class chick. She does drugs and she's like just problematic and they don't get along, and it's kind of like how she tries to normalize herself. I think her name's Annie or something, the girl. Basically, I was so unimpressed by this book. I was so annoyed. Like I said, it's written from like a single narrative, which just annoys me because you feel like you're constantly in this girl's head, but her head is just annoying. Like, it's not even interesting. There's one book that I really like. I feel uncomfortable saying that I like, but I feel like it's just a brilliantly written book, and some people might not like it, but it's Lolita by Vladimir something. I can't remember his last name, but it's like a, I guess it's a classic. But again, it's written from like a single narrative, but his narrative is interesting. Like, you get lost in his thoughts, his processes, his reasoning. Even just, it's almost written like a prose, almost like poetic. It's okay to be inside his head, right? As disturbing and weird and like sick his head is, it's interesting, right? But with her, she's just annoying. There's also like random parts where you find out information. So for example, she does things but you don't know she does them until like well after the fact, and then by the time you found out that she's done something, it's just like, oh okay, this is very underwhelming. That would be the key thing that I said about the book, is extremely underwhelming. I don't know why. It has like 3.97 or something stars on Goodreads. People really like it. I was just over it. Like, I don't recommend it. It was awful. The second thriller that I read was Claire McIntosh. I started this in February, but I finished it in March, so I'm still sticking in February. And it's called I See You. Again, it's all very underwhelming. I think the main character, middle-aged white woman, you know, she has a very uninteresting, uneventful life. And then, she ends up seeing a picture on some local newspaper, and it's a picture of her, and then with like some number, and it looks like a dating site, right? So she freaks out and then like gets over it. But then she spots like another picture of another woman, and it's just like, it was just, the concept was interesting. So the essential premise is somebody is taking pictures of women on the tube and then putting it on a website, like a dating website, and then wealthy people pay for the information and essentially stalk. But they stalk you and then they ask you out for a date. So you know, like that kind of serendipitous moment. That's the word, serendipity. It's a good word. So for example, you're on a tube and you catch the same tube every day to work, and you get off at the same stop, you're there at the exact same time. So it's like stalking in a weird way. So basically, and then the guy opposite you, you know, asks you for coffee and you're like, oh, it's like a cute moment, like whatever. But instead, he's kind of actually found out your information off this website, he purchased it, and now he's stalking you. It's interesting considering that it is possible, it is plausible. It's not, it falls in that shade of gray of like plausibility. But again, it was just really underwhelming because the main character is like I said, a middle-aged white woman who just had middle-aged white woman issues. And it was just like, meh. And then even when you found out like who was involved in this website, it was just like a really crap reasoning. The ending was all just like, let's throw it together and like ta-da. And I think there's going to be probably a book two, just because the way it ends, and it's just, it was just underwhelming. Like, again, it has like a really high rating on Goodreads. I gave it like a 2 because it wasn't tragic, but it was just extremely underwhelming. I am so over it. And you know what I'm also over? Every single thriller that's written by a woman being compared to Gone Girl. Like, I'm over it. Like, how many times is a reviewer going to have like, oh my God, it's like the next Gone Girl? It's like, no, it's really not. Wow, so I'm just dragging books today. My favorite piece of reading that I did in February, can I even say the word, was Why I'm No Longer Talking to White People About Race by Reni Eddo Lodge. It was a brilliant piece of writing. Like, absolutely brilliant. If I can find the original blog post that kind of sparked the book, starts out with the original blog post so you can read it and then continue on. However, like I said, if I can find the original blog post, I'm sure like it's interwebs, I will inshallah put it up in like the notes so you can read the blog post first and then decide if you want to read the book. But I highly recommend it. It will definitely kind of, if you're like a person of color or like a black woman, it will kind of just reaffirm things that you already thought about. So there may not be like this great revelation, but I think it's just really interesting how she kind of, particularly when it comes to like intersectionality and dealing with like white women and stuff. I honestly cannot like recommend the book enough. It is well written, it is informative. I gave it a 4-star. Like, I'm a stickler for things, so I gave it 4 stars. It is just, it's simple in a really beautiful manner, because it doesn't, it's not heavy in like sort of classic literature sense, like, you know, when it talks about feminism and when it talks about like race, it's not just very cold and academic. There is like a humility to it, if that makes sense. As you would expect, it touches on like what is racism, like, you know, I guess reverse racism and stuff like that. And it's, like I said, it's, I don't know how to explain it, but there is a really brilliant review by someone called Cliff. It kind of like a summation of everything. Racism is prejudice with power. This means that minorities without power cannot be racist. I've said this before, as a black or minority person, you cannot be racist. You can be prejudiced. You can be prejudiced and act upon your prejudices. Is that how you say it? But you cannot be racist. And that literally explains it for you. Structural racism is a summation of expectations, associations, and social forces that are assumed to be the norm in daily life. Their presence is so perverse that their existence is often not recognized. White privilege is the absence of consequences of race. White feminism refers to the campaign for women's rights while continuing to be blind to racism. Class is often used as a code word for racist views. By the way, that is brilliant, because I really want to discuss class, but I don't know how to go about it, because I don't know if I can fathom or like correctly articulate what I mean. Class is really, really interesting, because class is kind of the determining factor in, say, someone like Nigel Farage and someone like, what's his name, Tony or Tommy Robinson? I don't know, the white guy. So here you have, and this is the thing, you can have someone like Jacob Rees-Mogg, the politician, say like profoundly like racist. Bruh, another example, the buffoon with the blonde hair who just babbles, used to be our mayor, fat, white, conservative, Etonian, come on bruh, what's his name? Boris Johnson, there you go, him. He has said some absolutely vitriolic, vile, just downright racist stuff, right? But we kind of like overlook it. And he says it in this like Blovian kind of like jovial, like, oh, he can say these things, but we don't take him to task for it, because he says it in like a fancy suit and in a cut glass, you know, British accent. And it's just like, oh, you know, it's just Boris being Boris, or it kind of strips away the strength of what they're saying. And people are so much more likely to swallow what you say when you sound like a toff. Essentially, take, like I said, look at, it's branding, literally, it's like marketing and branding yourself. And we also associate intelligence with class, by the way, we do that a lot. But also, like I was saying, so for someone like, if you're going to compare the two, Tommy Robinson and, the stupid tweed jacket, Farage, yes, if you're going to compare the two, right, they both say like vitriolic stuff, right? But one of them we can shout down, or like I say, we, like the general public, and be like, oh, he's just, you know, he's working class, and you know, he's not articulate, and he's a bit of an idiot, and he's a buffoon. And you know, when he goes on something like Question Time, people just shout him down and don't take him seriously, and they just laugh in his face, right? But then when Farage, with his tweed jacket and kind of like, ha ha ha, I'm one of the guys, you know, I'm one of you and I'm not part of the establishment, apart from literally being everything the establishment is, right? He can say like these things of being like really divisive, really vitriolic, and you know, just horrible crappy stuff, and lie through his teeth, like just straight up lie and make facts and just utter nonsense. He gets called on to Question Time time and again, even though he's lying and he's saying nothing of value, nothing with credence, nothing that would incite sort of like intellectual discourse or something that will, you know, require you to think or articulate. And I get it, like there are people, as in a society, we do have like quote-unquote academics who, you know, are contrary and will try and, you know, instigate a discussion just like for the better good. I mean, like thinking is great, thinking is brilliant, like your mind should be like able to change when things are interesting and when you're posed with facts and have your ideas and morals questioned. I mean, that's the beauty of having the ability to think. Like that's the thing. I know a lot of people, especially on like Twitter, and say stuff like, oh, you come across really forthright with the things that you say, and like, what if you're wrong? If I'm wrong, then my mind changes. What's that quote? if the facts change there, my mind changes with it. Like, I'm not an idiot. I'm not a complete buffoon. I'm not saying that my opinions are solely right. I like to think the majority of the time I'm right. But if you approach me in a respectful manner and we have a discussion and then I can respect your opinion, it doesn't mean that your opinion is any better than mine, unless, like I said, you know, the facts change, in which case my mind changes with it. Only an idiot. And again, it's that whole thing about like emotion and, you know, facts. And I think we lived in, this is totally digressive, by the way, but anyway, I'm rambling, so I'm here, so we may as well, right? So it's we live in like a post-factual world. I mean, like Michael Gove, who was like education minister, right, saying stuff like, well, people don't need experts and we don't need facts, and, you know, just go with your feeling. It's lunacy. How could you, like, you can't even pass an assignment without referencing and using other people's ideas to create and, you know, expand upon such ideas. You have people who, like, it's like, here's this person who studied this thing for years and, you know, has spent a lifetime educating themselves on this aspect or whatever the case may be, right? And then here you have like this buffoon who's like, well, technically I don't think it's right because I say so. I feel it in my waters. It's lunacy. And I think that's, it's just bizarre. And it's fascinating how class plays a huge role in that, like how we excuse and pacify and kind of like look through rose-tinted glasses when certain people speak. Again, like, I do it. People assume that I'm not posh. I'm an idiot. I'm an absolute idiot, but I guess the manner in which I speak, or maybe the tone that I speak, it's palatable for some people. So whereas it gives like this false sense of intelligence. I'm not intelligent, I'm an idiot. It's just, it's fascinating. It's absolutely brilliant. And I think it's a cultural thing. And I think it's a distinctly British thing, because the author is British, by the way, if you didn't know. It's the same way that you can go to like the States and people treat you differently because you're British. It's bizarre. But I guess that's what happens when you, you know, take over half the world. You know, you can set your own ideals and structures, and it's the same way that you can have like elitism that's innate to like British people. It's the same way that you can have a so-called academic look back at history and say things like India was all the more better for being colonized because, you know, we built railways. What kind of bizarre revisionist history is this? But yeah, it's class is really, really interesting. And if anyone knows of any books that I could read upon class, or anyone who like is interested in it and wants to like discuss it with me sometime, feel free to like do it on Goodreads, or like, I think the page for the podcast should be up by now. It says h_thoughtcrimes at Twitter, the same on Goodreads. So yeah, do that, say hi, or you can email me, by the way. You can just like chuck me an email at herthoughtcrimes@gmail.com if you want to discuss certain things. But yeah, those are the books that I read kind of like back in February. Yeah, hopefully that was useful. Basically, this is just where I geek out about books and talk about random stuff without having particular structure. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, share it. Again, I'm still not on Twitter, so share it, like it. Find me on like SoundCloud and the podcast app, which you can leave a review and stuff. Email me if you just want to say hey, or ask me anything, like queries, comments, queries, comments and concerns. Yeah, so throw me an email if you literally just want to say hey, do so. Yeah, so that will be the end of my wrap-up reads. I hope you enjoyed it. I did. It was fun. And see you on the flip side. Peace.